organizations to create devastation across the region and beyond, that's up to them. But if they want to bring back stability to this region, then the Americans have to come to Iran and to rethink their policy towards the country.
So, Mr. Lane, is this miscalculation going to cost the West dearly? Because let's not forget, Iran came out of Lausanne saying very structurally exactly what was discussed there and exactly what was agreed upon there.
Well, let me say first that I think President Obama is more likely to agree with my colleague than I am. I think that he said a lot of things there that President Obama would want to agree with. But again, I stress that there is nothing agreed to until everything is agreed to. There may have been areas of agreement during the talks, but if there was really an agreement, if there was a genuine framework of a comprehensive agreement, there would have been a joint statement out of Lausanne. And there was not. There was a fact sheet issued in Washington by the United States. There was a joint statement agreed to by the European community and Tehran that was read in both languages in Lausanne. But even that agreed to statement had discrepancies in it that may have been translation or may have been actual issues involved in the whole thing. At the end of the day, the next 75 days or next 80 days are going to be focused on trying to bridge the differences between the inspections, the lifting of the sanctions, which I believe are the two key issues that are remaining. The United States will publicly stick to its position that the inspections need to be intrusive, need to be not only intrusive, but they need to be snap inspections without any warning, and that the sanctions will be removed gradually. At the end of the day, looking forward 80 days from now, I believe we're going to wind up with a situation where Iran's position becomes the winning position. President Obama is likely to give Iran the vast majority of what it is standing firm on today. And we will wind up with language that is fuzzy enough where Obama will be able to claim victory here in the United States in his negotiations with Congress, but nonetheless, the bundle, the vast amount of the deal will be done on terms that are very advantageous to Tehran.
Well, Professor Morandi, listening to Mr. Lane and his interpretation of the course of events over the past week, it brings into context exactly that stumbling block, which we call the deficit of trust between the two sides, and it makes it quite bigger than what I was anticipating it would be.
No, I don't think there's any reason for the Americans to have a deficit of trust. In the past, every time the Iranians and the Americans negotiated, it was the Americans who stabbed the Iranians in the back, whether it was over Afghanistan, where the Iranians cooperated with the United States in order to beat back Al-Qaeda, the extremist organization that the Americans allowed to grow along with the Taliban through Saudi funding. The ideology of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda is the same of the Saudi regime and the Qatari regime and the regime in the Emirates. After the Iranians cooperated, the United States called Iran an axis of evil. And in more recent history, wherever the Iranians tried to approach the United States or at least responded to requests by the United States, such as over the hostages in Lebanon, the United States on every single occasion betrayed Iran. During the Tehran Declaration, when the Turkish Prime Minister and the Brazilian President came to Iran to resolve the problem, the U.S. President sent both of these leaders a letter, Obama, stating that he would accept an agreement within a particular framework. That framework was respected. A deal was signed, the Tehran Declaration. Immediately Obama rejected it and went for further sanctions, basically slapping the Brazilian president and the Turkish prime minister in the face. So the United States is the side that is unreliable. The Iranians have respected their agreement, just as in the joint plan of action. The Iranians have respected it to word by word, according to the IAEA. Yet over the last year and a half, the United States has repeatedly, and so has the EU, expanded the sanctions regime by adding new people and new companies. time and time again. So it's the United States that is unreliable, not Iran.
Well, Mr. Lane, I see you shaking your head there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's ample reason for mistrust on both sides. This is a almost 40-year, certainly more than 35-year history of a lack of trust and tensions between our two countries. I think there's a lot of effort that needs to go into it on both sides to overcome this mistrust. It's not something that's going to happen anytime in the short term. Even if there is a legitimate agreement that both sides honor on the nuclear talks, the overcoming of the mutual distrust is going to be a very long thing. I note that the distrust did start with the taking over of the American embassy back in the late 70s during President Carter's term of office. Americans have not yet forgotten that particular incident. You can argue that that's far enough in the past that we ought to get past it. But as a country, we have not yet gotten past that. And there have been occasions over the course of the last 40 years or even the last 10 years where we perceive that the government of Iran has been not only less than forthcoming, but intentionally deceptive about what their programs and activities are vis-a-vis their nuclear program. The hiding of the Frodo facility, as well as what we believe to be Iran's export of terrorism throughout the Middle East and the neighborhood, destabilizing it. So there's enough distrust to go around, and I think that there's a possibility everything can be put back together, but it's going to be a long haul.
Well, Mr. Lane, I'm glad you bring up the hostage standoff between Iran and the U.S., because just looking at the Algiers Accords that were signed to defuse that situation in 1981, the accords stipulate that the U.S. will not interfere politically, militarily, or economically, directly or indirectly, in Iran's affairs. And yet we've seen the U.S. violate that obligation year after year, be it by supporting Saddam Hussein during the Iraqi imposed war in Iran, or by levying economic sanctions against Iran.
If yes, I could it's been also years add a since point I've here. Read that text, and I don't precisely recall exactly how it was phrased or the terms and conditions. I would be surprised if there's not something in there that limits the United States' obligation not to interfere and not to influence Iranian affairs to a certain pattern of behavior and things like that resulting from that particular standoff. I would be surprised if it's open-ended, but if you assure me that it's totally open-ended, then I'll take your word for it.
All right, for Mr. Lane's satisfaction, I will quote that provision in the accords. And Professor Moranzi, I'll let you respond too. And the accord goes, I quote, "The United States pledges that it is and from now on will be the policy of the United States not to intervene directly or indirectly, politically or militarily in Iran's internal affairs," end quote. Go ahead, Professor Moranzi.
Well, I think there are a number of things. Actually, the grievances are one-sided. The United States has no legitimate grievances against Iran. The United States carried out a coup in the country. They supported a despotic regime. They plundered the wealth of the country for decades. After the they tried to block the revolution in the country. After the revolution, they gave refuge to the Shah and his henchmen, and they were interfering in Iranian internal affairs, and that's why students took over the embassy. The United States is the guilty partner in all this. After that, the United States supported Saddam Hussein, gave him chemical weapons, helped him use chemical weapons. The United States expanded the sanctions regime against the Iranian people, against ordinary Iranians, over a period of 3.5 decades. And recently, after the sanctioning of the central bank, many Iranian cancer patients died because of a shortage of medicine, and so did other ill Iranians. So the United States really has nothing to complain about. On the other hand, if there's terrorism in this region, it's because the Israeli regime is an apartheid regime that slaughters its neighboring people in its neighboring countries and suppresses the Palestinian people through a regime of apartheid. And the United States has supported the Saudi Wahhabi regime, this barbaric regime that exports the most disgusting ideology in the world, where we have people being slaughtered in Nigeria by Boko Haram, which has the Saudi ideology. We have people being slaughtered just days ago in Kenya by the same ideology. And the United States has backed this. They backed it in Syria, they backed it in Libya, they backed it in Iran. And now the Saudis are carrying out devastating attacks against civilians, and the United States are backing them in Yemen. And they're fighting along the same side of the battlefield as Al-Qaeda in Yemen. So U.S. policy in this region is disastrous, it is immoral, and they really have nothing to complain about when it comes to Iran.
All right, I'm being told we're fresh out of time. Let me thank my guests. Joining us from studios in Tehran is Professor Mohammad Mirandi of the University of Tehran, and joining us from Washington is President of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your input in this edition of The Debate. From me and the entire team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.